Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Hello and happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. You were moving so fast, I felt like I needed to take a breath and slow down.
Okay, I'm moving so fast?
Yes.
Okay, well.
Like you're amped
up. We got a show to put on, Elizabeth.
Yes, we do. We have actually a show that has been almost, I would say, 9 months in the making, that my guests and I have been talking about getting together and having this conversation off and on for, it seems like, almost 9 months. So I'm excited to get to it because I think it is a big topic, and I'm hoping that a lot of people will resonate with this conversation and call in and share their thoughts and feelings and questions. And it's funny because I generally have a direction that I'm going with the show. You know, something inspired it, something came up, something was in the news, and, you know, it kind of resonated with me. And I said, here's where I'm going to go this week. This is a topic that, because my guest and I have been talking about getting together for the last 9 months, and I've had callers that have called in and talked about this issue, and it's not an area of my expertise at all. So I'm counting on my guests and counting on my listeners to bring their expertise and experience to this conversation. Instead of being kind of lesson oriented, I feel like I usually have some sort of message or lesson or something that I want to share. Today, it's much more about conversation and understanding and kind of sharing perspective, sharing our life stories in a way that kind of opens up comfort in our connectedness. The topic today is about finding the able in disability and disabilities in general. And, you know, the piece of our mental health that is wrapped up heavily in our sense of community and connection and self-worth and purpose and our ability to be valued in society and in our families in a way that feels meaningful. And that quite often for those who are disabled, there is a sense of disconnect or maybe being outside of the general community, that inclusion or just being seen for our able selves gets overshadowed by what might be visible in a disability. And so I wanted to talk about what that's like. To be a part of a community that in some ways can be invisible or dismissed, but in other ways is starting to make strides in our culture. So we will be opening the phone lines as always. Our number is 781-3875. I am Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And if you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in and share your thoughts or questions. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. And you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. And you can podcast our shows to subscribe and listen at your convenience by going to your App Store or iTunes and searching Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe and the shows will come to you. So for this week, I am going to be relying on the expertise of my new friends, Bev and Brian Ging. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thanks for having us. I know we got rain delayed a few times.
We had issues.
But
and you said 9 months. You know, it's almost like having a baby here.
That's right.
Just to get us here.
It did. We had to go through the whole process of kind of finding our way to this conversation. But it also gave me at least an opportunity to think a little bit more about what kind of things we could talk about or where to take this conversation. And I also appreciate Bev has done some homework and thought about some things that we can talk about. But let's just start off talking a little bit about your story. You've been together, you've been married for 29 years, together longer than that. So Brian is a quadriplegic and Bev has been his spouse and mainstay and support system for, I guess, since college.
30-some years.
So can you talk a bit about your story and how you got to where you are today or how this all started?
Yeah. Well, back in the early 80s, I was in an auto accident and became a quadriplegic. And I did the whole rehab thing and I was, young and ambitious and wanted to get on with life. And I started back. I was injured in an auto accident while I was down at Azusa Pacific. And then I came back home because, you know, I was paralyzed. And so I wanted to get back into school really quick. I wanted, you know, I was young and whatever, you know, when you're young. And so
you feel like life is passing you by, right? You just want to stay on the trail.
Yeah, I wanted to keep progressing forward. And mm-hmm. getting a degree was a big issue, and getting back with life. And so it was January of 84, and I'm waiting to take a test and
at Cal Poly.
Yeah. And I'm waiting out in the front, and lo and behold, this young little Norwegian woman is going to proctor my test. And they set us up, and we did the testing, and then
we kept testing, and I'm still testing.
And they kept asking, well, who do you want? And I was like, well, I like that Beverly. She's pretty good. And then a friend of Bev's, who she had known forever, knew that I, you know, was kind of interested in Beverly. And she's like, well, just ask her out for ice cream or something. And I was like, really? Oh, okay. Well, here I go. And to overuse a word, bada bing, bada boom.
Oh, Brian, I hate that.
How is that for you?
Well, it's a really long story, which we don't have time for here. But we met at Cal Poly. I was a graduate student in biology, and Brian was coming back to school after getting hurt. And we became friends through it was very serendipitous. And we dated for a long time. And then we eventually ended up getting married in October 1988. And we've had a good life. The years have gone by really. Yeah, we're very thankful. It's been a good union.
So you've seen probably a lot of changes in the community in the 29, 30 years you've been together. When you first got together as a couple, did people look at you funny? Was there
Oh, man, we have story. We don't have that much time.
Yeah, we don't have that much time, Elizabeth.
I can just sit back in my chair. Yeah. But I, you know, we were not 30, 40 years ago, we were not as even inclusive as we are now. So what was that like?
Nematodes,
forceful, bold, dynamic.
Yeah, people
are, you know, there are always people saying weird negative things or having like the usual stereotypes of, and I guess there was a lot of that, and there still is some of that, but I believe most people are good, and most people, if they do say stupid things, it's not because they're mean, it's just they don't know any better. Mm-hmm. So I think if you try to be positive and understanding, then that's going to get reflected back to you. And there are only just a few, maybe 6 people in the world, okay, maybe more than that, that are just maybe don't have the best thoughts in their heart, or maybe they don't want to learn how to treat other people the way they would want to be treated. Yeah. And you can get stuck on that and become really negative yourself. And so we don't want to be negative people. I think Brian and I are both really positive people. And I think if you're positive, then the people around you are going to start to.
It's like Michelle Obama. When they go low, we go high.
Mm. Yeah. And there are funny stories and people, you know, going out and some of the things, like if we go out to dinner and people would look at me and say, what would he like? And I'm like, that, and people still do that.
They do.
Yeah. And it's a terribly ignorant. And
we have a pretty good system. Bev won't answer. She's just.
I'll just look at Brian. Because it's like, why would someone do that unless they think that just because somebody has a disability, they can't, like. And it's true, some people aren't able to communicate in a way that we understand. But most people, especially with modern technology, do have ways to communicate. And you just have to be patient and really, like, listen and think in a people first, like, how would I want to be treated? Not just like seeing this person as an object or somebody that's just not a person first.
So your wife is very passionate about standing up for all people.
I would think Beverly would say that I'm somewhat assertive in most situations.
Brian is assertive. Brian's become more assertive.
I mean, I've had to, you know, go solo in certain areas. And, you know, Bev and I are not always together. And if something's not accessible, I got to get, you know, like if I had to get through that doorway or have somebody open that door, I'm going to roll on up and say, hey, sir, ma'am, could you open that door for me? And
so what's been the biggest challenges? Because you've been together for so long. You've been living with your disability for so many years. Has there been a change in culture from the time you went back to Poly and were wanting to get your education and dealing with accessibility or inaccessibility or people's opinions? Has there been growth or change since that point?
Oh, yeah.
In what ways?
By far. Just the fact that it's not taken for granted, but access to buildings and access to communications with people. And I would say that, you know, people aren't asking this goofy questions all the time.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, too, I think that the places where you see the biggest difference are in education, anything, like whether you're talking at school or university. People, I think, who are involved in education as professionals tend to see every person as having endless potential. And so I think when you think about that, it's just natural for people to want to help people with disabilities make the best of their potential. And also in traveling, Brian and I really like to travel, and I think we've seen huge changes over the last 30 plus years. And when we travel now, it's not a big deal to go someplace, and that you just expect that hotels or whatever, that they, you know, traveling with a disability is not a big deal, and that hotels for the most part try to be, you know, as accommodating as they should be under the ADA, although there's still a lot of work to be done, definitely. But there are some other areas, surprisingly, I think in healthcare, where you're more likely to see people who have tend to have stereotypes about disability, because it's like somebody with a chronic condition or whatever that can't easily be fixed. Sometimes that's really frustrating for people who go into medicine wanting to fix people. And it's like, I'm okay. Yeah, we'd love to be fixed, but we want to just live our lives and have a full life with what we have.
And when we talk about disabilities, also, you know, the language around how we talk about disabilities or able-bodiedness has changed in the last 40 years, and how people describe their experience. Or how has your language about yourself changed, or has it changed?
I don't think our language has changed that much.
Yeah, it's other people. And we try not to get hung up. See?
We have to watch our language.
We have to watch hung up.
Yeah,
it's like,
if somebody says he or him, and they don't use people first language, we try to
educate them gently.
Yeah.
But it's like when
when you're referred to as when
him.
Right.
Yeah, like.
And so because I wonder if it's changed generationally too, people who are disabled and at different ages or at different times in their life. If you're 15 or 40 or 70, your comfort around your disability or the community has changed. And I don't know if I'm asking that question right, because there's a television show that just started this year. It's Speechless, about a young boy who has cerebral palsy, and he doesn't have the ability to verbalize, so he has an interpreter with him that reads. I don't know if you had a chance. And so I find that fascinating that we've grown so much now that we've mainstreamed on, you know, television a family and they're living with the disability and how they come. And the story's more about the family and their experiences together than really the focus on the disability. That's secondary to just how the family supports each other and communicates and interacts with the world. But I find it interesting that one of the big pieces of the storyline always is the family trying to deal with ignorance in the community or inaccessibility with the schools, or, you know, that still becomes part of the conversation, that within your world you can build understanding and community and the family gets each other, but they outside of the family or outside of the community, the larger world, it seems, still doesn't know how to be natural.
Right.
Or
right.
to respond.
And it's like if people just start to think about it's disability is normal. There's actually a website, Disability is Normal, because when you think about it, we're all temporarily able-bodied, and each and every one of us has the potential to become a person with a disability right now.
Yeah.
And it's like I think we went through a period like 10 years ago where people were tripping all over themselves trying to say physically challenged and all these things, which seemed really awkward. And it's so – I think they were getting away from that, the whole physically challenged thing. And it's like it's okay to see the word disability, but it's best to say a person with a disability, not like the disabled, because then it's putting the disability ahead of the person.
Right. It becomes the identity instead of –
Yeah.
It's
just part of. It's just part of. It's just a different way of living. It's not anything special.
Well, and it's interesting because when I talk about mental health issues, I always encourage people to say – you know, depression, I struggle with feelings of depression, not my depression or my anxiety, because once we start identifying as being depressed or that depressed person, it becomes the thing that is ruling our life.
Right, right.
If you'd like to be part of the conversation, our number is 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests today are Bev and Brian Ging. They're here talking about living with a disability and being more than just how people see or identify you, and being able to live a full and rich life. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about this, how to live a full life with a disability and how to improve inclusion in our communities as a whole. And how do we begin the conversation with each other? Because I think a lot of times what prevents us from having conversations are that people are afraid or concerned about saying the wrong thing. So how do we start the conversation? 805-781-3875. I'd like to welcome my uncle into the conversation. Hi, Uncle Nick.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So my Uncle Nick has been, how long have you been in your chair?
Pardon me?
How long have you been living with your disability?
Well, 40 years.
And so how have things changed or been the same for you? What's your experience been like?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. Your guests that you have on are very articulate about everything, so I think they've said a lot. Mm-hmm. But my situation, well, let me just start by saying I think a lot of it is attitude, which I think your guests certainly have a positive attitude. And I think you have to be really upfront and engage people, rather than sort of sitting back like a wallflower and waiting for people to come to you. Otherwise, I think you're just going to remain, you know, just where you are. You're not going to grow anywhere. So I was living a little, very full life in those 40 years. So, you know, I think I'm very lucky, silly to say that, but that's what I feel I am, yeah, so.
Well, and you know, taught school for 30 of those 40 years. And how was it with the kids in your classroom when you would wheel in and they would see you for the first time?
Well, that was interesting because my very first classroom experience, I was in the wheelchair classroom. I came down the walkway to the quad of the school, and the kids gathered around, and they looked at me, and they were jumping rope. So they said, you want to jump rope? And I said, I can't. So they said, oh, okay. And then they just came over and talked to me and, you know, got me into the conversation that way. So I was very lucky that was my first experience with being dealing with people. It was cool.
And so have things changed, do you see, in 40 years in how accepting maybe the greater cultures, or do you find it easier now than it was 40 years ago?
No,
or?
I never had any problem with it all. I think people probably are more accepting because that's the way of the world nowadays. Mm-hmm. I think people are people, and they're going to behave, you know, the way they normally would. They're going to be snotty, or they're going to be engaging or positive, so... I don't see a lot of difference between that, you know,
Dallas or so. Anything you want to add?
No, it sounds like we'd like to meet Uncle Nick.
Yeah. We're on the same page,
yeah.
Uncle Nick.
Yeah,
you guys sound pretty cool, man.
Where do you live, Uncle Nick?
I live in Palo Alto. I'm actually in assisted living thing. Okay. The wound I have, I'm sure you're going to be dealing with those over the course of your injury. But I have a great spot here in an apartment, and I still do a lot of private tutoring. So I'm still leading a very active life.
Good for you.
Really enjoy it.
Yeah, we're amazed. We get a couple of really good publications. One of them is New Mobility, and the other one is Paraplegia News. And we've been...
I get New Mobility, yeah.
Yeah, they're awesome publications, and we've been blown away by how many people are living long, full lives in spite of sometimes severe disabilities because of modern technology. And that's going to, I think, help reshape people's attitudes toward disability because they see that, you know, it's just because you have a disability doesn't mean you should be just shut out of life. And unfortunately, there are factors that do shut people out, but we should always work to break those down.
Yeah.
Second of that.
What's your husband's name?
Brian. Yeah, Uncle Nick.
You got a good partner there, Brian. She's quite a spokesperson.
I think I figured that out after a few years.
Nick, thanks for taking the time to call and keep this conversation rolling.
Yeah, I'm glad I should say something and have some positive input. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you, Uncle Nick.
Thanks, Uncle Nick.
I'll talk to you soon.
Good luck.
And that's my Uncle Nick.
And sounds so, like a great guy.
Let's jump into the relational part here, because you have been married for 29 years. What's that like? Almost 20
almost
years.
Almost 29.
Beth keeps saying that, Brian, like she doesn't know if she's going to make it to 29.
You might not make it, honey.
Yeah.
Are you on the rocks?
No. We haven't been on the rocks too much, have we, Brian?
Not
too much. There were a few years that were kind of hard. I think kind of the middle years, kind of the years where you kind of go, what am I doing with this person? But I think every marriage goes through that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what have been some of the challenges? Let's go there.
Oh.
Wow. Why are we starting on the negative?
No.
Because then we're going to finish on a high.
Yeah. No, but Brian, wouldn't you say some of the biggest challenges have also been the most enriching? And I think from my perspective, because of our situation, we have to involve a lot of other people in our lives. And that in the beginning was something I struggled with. I thought, I don't know if we can do this. It's like opening our lives to other people.
Total strangers.
That's really hard. But now, looking back on 30 plus years of Cal Poly students who have been, you know, we've opted to have Cal Poly students pretty exclusively, some Cuesta, as caregivers who help us out, because I have a very fulfilling career outside of also being Brian's primary other half. Mm-hmm. And that requires a lot of orchestration, a lot of trust. And these Cal Poly students, probably hundreds of Cal Poly students, and some that have become like very close family members to us. And we would not have had that experience if not for this challenge. So mm-hmm. It's been the most challenging thing, but it's also been the most life-enriching thing because we, at any one time, have 5 or 6 part-time Cal Poly students who help us. And we become, for a lot of them, their home away from home. And they look at us like parents. We're godparents to their children. We've gone to countless weddings. We've been there for people going through bad times. We've had students show up on our doorstep and need a place to stay, and we take them in, and we're glad to provide whatever we can to give them a, you know, we love them. So that's been like a really tough thing, but a really enriching thing.
The unexpected joy.
Exactly. That thing. And then probably the other thing would be dealing with serious medical issues that have been, that's probably another really, really hard thing that we've had to go through. Yeah. I mean, there were periods.
You've been through multiple hard things.
Yeah. I mean, as far as dealing with health issues, that is because you don't have that certainty. I mean, nobody has certainty, but when you've had the rug pulled out from under you and you've had to just kind of pull on your inner strength and having some faith, Brian and I are both pretty, like, we have strong faith and we have friends and we're thankful we have the best physician in the whole world. We will not say his name because he would be bombarded, but we have a doctor who is worth his weight in gold and we consider a very dear friend. And if not for that, I think we'd be in a very tough situation.
Very.
And so it's about a community, finding, as all people do, try to find your place in the world in that community of support.
Yeah, it's a very dynamic social web of, you know.
You can't be an isolationist, I would imagine.
No.
Because
you can't.
Depend on others.
No, you cannot. That's in this situation. And I think that's true of, I mean, we don't want to just dwell on our situation because there are some, like, every possible situation out there. And for, we've met so many people who also have, you know, what other people consider serious disabilities of all kinds. And they also are living full lives. And some people are struggling to live full lives. But we all have to help each other and realize that none of us can do that alone.
My guests today are Brian and Bev Ging. They are here talking about living with disability, being abled in disability, and how a full life and a rich life can be achieved by everyone or anyone with the right community, with the right support, with the right partners. And we're talking about trying to encourage the conversations about, I don't know, those things that we care about with each other and trying to focus on what makes us individuals and unique individuals and not those things that may be apparent if it's a disability. And for a lot of people, their disabilities aren't visual or not visible.
Right.
And so I want to talk a little bit about the mental health aspect of living with a disability. And we invite your calls, 805-781-3875, to add to the conversation. If there's anything you want to ask Bev and Brian or talk about your experience or anything that you'd like to add to this. We're talking about how do we begin a conversation with someone if we feel uncomfortable, because quite often, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, is that sometimes what bridges or prevents people from having conversations or connecting with each other is this sense of awkwardness or concern that what if I say the wrong thing? What if I use the wrong language? What if I use the wrong words or terminology? And so people, and I find that with myself, I get so nervous about using the wrong words that it might cause the conversation to go awry, or I'll make someone uncomfortable. So then instead people turn and don't have any conversation at all. Like, how do we bridge that? And you seem to both be so upbeat that maybe that's not an issue to have, but I know that for, you know, some listeners or callers who had asked about this program earlier, they had said one of the challenges is that when they're out in public, people don't come over and start a conversation or don't feel comfortable talking because they're afraid of saying the wrong thing. And so how do you broach that?
I try to invite conversation.
And use humor. Brian uses humor.
Beverly uses lots of words. I use lots of humor.
Eye contact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not shy about coming out and want to get to know somebody, and you know, I want to know you. It's just as much as you probably want to figure out something about me or how I am in the chair, Oh, you're married. Whoa, really? You're married? Yes, I'm married.
And what do people think about that?
You know, I don't... I like to assume they assume, and we all know what happens when you assume. But it's just, I consider it normal.
It is sort of normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, people have all kinds of ideas, and we have another good strategy we haven't mentioned is we have a really, really amazing dog. We've always had a dog or several dogs, and I think that's something Brian and I share. We love people. We are genuinely interested in other people. I love learning about other people. We have faith. We have friends. We understand the village thing. And, like, back to the dog, that's pretty important.
You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And we're talking to Bev and Brian King about their life together and how we have conversations that might be challenging or difficult, but we press on and press forward. And we invite your phone calls when we come back at 781-3875. Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the conversation. And we had to take a little break for a compression release. I guess Brian has a brand new wheelchair, which actually is super fancy. And that's another thing, that things have changed dramatically in your life, I would think, with all of the new equipment, the ability to get out and be more mobile. And so it gives you more access to what's happening in the world around. And so today we're talking about the challenges and joys of living with a disability, living the slow life with a disability. I wonder if community, we talked about community, but maybe where you end up, the geography of where you're living might help make it easier or more difficult to live with a disability. How about the relationships that are cultivated with others in your community? How do your own thoughts about your disability shape how others see you? How about the attitude? My Uncle Nick called in and talked about attitude and how that influences how people are seen in community, or how people are portrayed, or how comfortable others are in coming up in having a conversation. So where would you like to go with this conversation? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. And Bill, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Bev and Brian for being on your show. He's one of my personal heroes. I hope you can hear this. But I wanted to contribute a little bit about the etiquette about talking to people in chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe other people can add to this, but I think that strangers should keep in mind that asking about how you got in the chair is really far down on the list of first questions you should ask.
Mm-hmm.
And partly that is because you don't know, and I've made the mistake myself, and have been told that bit before you start asking those kinds of questions. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was the lack of coverage that the media gives us, and it makes it hard for people who are non-disabled to know about our lives if they've never seen us on television, never seen us in even commercials or in movies or anything like that. And how can you possibly start a conversation with somebody that you don't know anything about?
Yeah. Well, I guess there's a flip side of that, Bill, because if they've only seen negative stereotypes, that's a bad thing, and you have an opportunity to educate them. And if they've seen positive ones, which we're starting to see now as people with disabilities become, like nowadays you see people with disabilities in commercials. It's not a big deal at all.
Yeah, a lot.
You're starting to see that a lot. And I think whenever Brian and I see that, we're like, wow, this is really great. It's like not a big deal. So it's like whoever you encounter, you know, that's an opportunity. And if you look at it in a positive way and don't get like take it personally, get mad or defensive about it, then I think you can make little bits of progress here and there. It's not going to happen overnight. But I think that's what motivates Brian and I, and for you too, to get involved in groups like Access for All, which is under the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation. And that we work on advocating for people with disabilities and also helping to break down barriers in our community, especially attitudinal barriers. So it's a challenge. But trying to be positive and constructive about it, I feel, is the best way to go. Because if you get mad at people, they're just going to get angry, and it's not going to go anyplace good.
What's your primary experience been like, Bill? Do you feel that it's easy for you to get around, be accepted, feel included and part of the community?
Oh, yeah. Most of my friends are non-disabled, and although I do belong to a group called Sloco Access, and we get together and share war stories and things, but I've had a pretty positive experience. Trying to expose ourselves in a positive light as much as possible. I don't know if you heard about our show last summer. We did a disabled artist show that the
really
media
cool.
gave very little attention to, which kind of irked me. But, things like that are an effort to show us in the most positive light.
Yeah, that was a really cool art show. And, I mean, I think that's, again, where, it would have been great to get more attention, but I don't think we were singled out for not getting attention. I think for any given day of the year, there's probably 10 different community groups representing 20 different interests, and they all feel like they didn't get the attention that they wanted. So,
and do we see – I mean, I feel like we hear quite a bit about Special Olympics and different opportunities in the sporting
world.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
So are we only focusing on one area, of disabilities, and we're not focusing
Big Brothers. Well,
yeah. I'm involved with Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and people are surprised that I'm a big sometimes. They're like, and I've had a couple little brothers. And, it's enriched my life immensely.
Yeah. Well, actually, Brian was the big brother of the year for the state of California a few years ago.
And I came in like in third or fourth for the nationals.
Yeah. But, Brian, it's like more people get out there and just join like mainstream groups. Like, it's no big deal because it really isn't a big deal. I think that really helps to change people's like thinking, too.
Anything else you want to add, Bill?
No, that's pretty much it. Thanks for having this show.
Yeah, thanks. Bill, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for calling in, Bill. All right, so one of the things I also want to bring up is the perspective that those with disabilities are somehow inherently heroic, or, or courageous or inspirational, and that somehow by virtue of being, you know, in a wheelchair, that you now have special coping mechanisms or resilience that normal humans do not. I mean, is that that is a stereotype
it
that
is.
Quite
yes.
often comes up. And how do you address that? Because doesn't that in some ways continue to separate you from the mainstream if people every time they're with you say, how do you do this? I couldn't do it if I were you.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
How do you address that?
You know, sometimes it is what it is. I'm Brian, and you know, I'm sure I'm not a superhero. And
I'm sure you're not too.
Really?
You knew that was coming.
But yeah, but sometimes you're just not going to get through to people. I remember Brian's grandmother, who was our neighbor when we lived by Meadow Park, and she at first, because she was part of an older generation, the idea of a person with a disability who happened to be her grandson dating a person without a disability was probably a little bit freaky. And so at first she thought I was Brian's nurse, which I was not. And then we tried so hard to convince her that I was not, that she thought I was some kind of queen bee, which I was not. I was just a person that just happened to be dating Brian. I wasn't special. I wasn't heroic. I wasn't inspirational. I was just a person. And I realized after a while, I'm like, you know what? She's probably not going to change her mind. It's got to be one way or the other, because those are the only ways that she understands.
Well, and maybe not just for Brian's grandmother, but let's open that door too about being married. I would imagine that quite often people assume that you're the nurse or you're doing something nice being married to Brian. I mean, you know that comes up. How do you address that? And what is your marriage like on a day-to-day basis?
On a day-to-day basis, it's like every other marriage, I would think.
I hope not. Not
a little better.
Not exactly. Let's shoot for a little higher.
But I mean, it has its ups and downs, and we work together. We communicate.
I think we have to have probably a more intimate relationship than most people, because we are together more than most people. I think one of the things that's been really healthy for our relationship is that since the beginning, I have always had my own life that's separate from Brian. And Brian's my number one supporter, but I'm first and foremost, I started out as a science teacher, and I've been involved in some aspect of science education my entire life. And I work for the Land Conservancy now doing the Learning Among the Oaks program, which is a huge joy to me. And I think having that in my life is like, I can't even find words to describe how happy I feel. And
we'll talk more about, because your face lights up when you talked about Learning Among the Oaks. What is that? And what?
Well, it was a dream. It actually, and Brian has been with me through the whole thing, but I was teaching gait science at Santa Margarita Elementary School in the 90s, looking out the window at the beautiful oaks around the school, and thought, wouldn't it be nice if we could take the kids out in the oak woodlands? And a whole bunch of lucky things happened. A whole bunch of wonderful people said yes at just the right time. And a whole bunch of partners decided that they would cooperate, most notably Santa Margarita Ranch owners, the University of California, then the Land Conservancy, a lot of donors who believed in us. And now the program is countywide. We have a program at Ocean View Elementary School in the South County and also at Santa Margarita. And we have a waiting list of schools that want to have our program. So I get to work with kids. I get to be out in nature, and I get to do something that means a lot to me. It doesn't get any better than that.
And likewise with Big Brothers Big Sisters, I get to work with a child and spend time, and, you know, they enrich our lives, especially my life, more than I do theirs.
Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about the mental health piece, because I touched on it and then we kind of skipped away from it. But have you been through periods of time where you struggled with depression or, you know, been down about the lack of access or feeling that the disability has prevented you in any way or for you. Bev, I mean, you both have such positive attitudes. Are you just naturally like that, or have there been times where you've struggled with the mental health pieces? And, you know, as Bill brought up earlier, and he didn't bring it on the air, but Bill and I have actually talked before about some of the portrayals in the media. You know, there was a movie that came out last year. I think it was called You Before Me or Me Before You.
Oh, that's a horrible
movie. It was horrible.
Oh, horrible. I can't even see that.
But that was a big mainstream movie, and I think it kind of continued the stereotype of this idea that when someone's in a wheelchair, their life is depressing and their life is over. And, you know, so have you struggled with the mental health pieces, and how do you address that, or how do we address that as a culture? Because that is a stereotype, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I have to say, you know, Brian and I have both gone through periods of depression, not thankfully anything like prolonged. I mean, Brian probably more so, but the times when Brian was dealing with depression, it's not Brian's nature to be depressed, and it actually turned out the worst times with that were because of a metabolic problem, which thankfully our doctor figured out. He had really low sodium that was affecting his mental health, and that was really hard. I mean,
it was hard
because Brian mentally was so down in the dumps, but it wasn't Brian. It was because there was an underlying medical issue. So, yeah, but I feel for people because I think that depression is a really serious thing in our society, and I think it's one of the most difficult things for people to acknowledge and deal with in a constructive way and not just get lost in it. And so I feel for people and try to be sensitive and empathetic about it.
So how do you think movies like that, though, prevent our cultural conversation from moving forward?
Well, thank goodness it was a horrible movie.
Yeah.
I think the ratings were not very good for it.
Yeah, but maybe it generates conversations that can actually be the silver lining, where people say, look at this movie, and this is why there's a problem here. So maybe as bad as that movie is, maybe the conversations that come out of it can be the positive part of it. And say, this isn't just because somebody has a disability doesn't mean their life isn't worth living. It's some kind of tragedy, whatever. That's a bigger tragedy.
Right, because it's, for me, it feels like there's only one of two stories that get the most play. One is if you have a disability, you're in a wheelchair, you're heroic, right? We talked about you're courageous, you're an inspiration. All of a sudden there's this pressure that you should inspire the world. Or on the other hand, you're deeply depressed and your life is over and it's not worth living. And I guess what we've been trying to talk about today is how do we just normalize, is probably not even the right word, but just mainstream everyone's experience of life as just being their experience of life. That we're all in some ways able and disabled in all parts of our life. So how do we take those two extreme perceptions and just kind of find that center ground, the Bev and Brian life, where you're just two people that are happily married and living your life? How does that become the story?
More people like, well, Brian, one person that we haven't mentioned, there's so many people out in the community that have been shining like lights for us. Like, I think of Paul Wolf.
Yes.
I think of Janice Fong Wolf. I think probably too many people to mention now, but Paul Wolf, especially, he's a retired Cal Poly architecture professor. And his passion when he was teaching at Cal Poly was universal design, which is design that includes everybody. It's not like people tack on a ramp to their house to make it accessible. It's like you design, if you're designing from the beginning, a house so that it doesn't look like a house for somebody with a disability. It looks like a house that welcomes everybody, you know, a mom with stroller or whatever. And so we met Paul and became really good friends. And he's been one of those champions, like, that lights the way for everybody else to see that there's a different way of thinking.
It goes back to that community again.
Yeah.
Finding your people. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests are Bev and Brian King. And we're talking about living with disability and having it be not how we identify who we are, but just a piece of the story, and the greater story being who we are as individuals and people in the world. 805-781-3875. Rosemary, what's on your mind today? Hi.
Hi. Some of the topics that you've covered are really good. The one I thought of was something that's practical. Just last week, there was an article by the DMV of California saying how many handicap placards, you know, for the blue parking have expired. The person actually died, but the family kept the plaque, or somebody lost one and had to apply for another, and that lost one was kept by whoever found it, and they use it even though they may not have a handicap, and how that's starting to impact the people who actually need the parking. And I wondered if this young couple has had any issues with that locally. Of course, this article talked about all California and how they're going to try and, you know, they're going to try looking at the actual number of people who are parked and find out if that's a one that had is supposed to have been expired and not used anymore.
Thank you for bringing that up, Rosemary. So something as practical as parking, how does that impact your life, or does it on a daily basis?
Yes, it does. But we always try to make the best of what we got.
Yeah, but I think there are always going to be people who abuse the system. And I think a bigger issue is there are people who abuse the placard system, but I think a bigger problem is not having the required designated number of accessible parking spaces, especially for people like us who use a van and we need to have that lift space, that there just aren't enough of those spaces designated. And so you end up, you know, in a bad situation. But yeah, I agree. There is a problem with the placards and people abusing that. The best way to deal with it, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I don't know if there is an easy answer to that, but it is a problem.
Thank you, Rosemary. And I think what's a challenge is that not all disabilities are visual,
right,
or visible. And so we can't assume if someone's putting a plaque in their car that unless we can see a disability, they get to park there. So I think it's a very slippery slope.
Yeah. And it's like, well, another slippery slope is people misusing the service dogs. I mean, that's a huge problem that people are trying to say an animal is a service animal when it really isn't. And that makes it really tough for people who really do have, service animals, and they do need to have that access, which they are required to have by law. But when people abuse that system, it helps build up some really bad feelings and causes a lot of problems.
Again, it starts to become the us or them and separation instead of being more inclusive and making us all one grand community. Hi, John, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. Hi, Bev and Brian. This is John Ashbaugh. I just thought I'd call in and compliment you guys for the work you do. I know, you know, Brian, you've been out there. The first time I think I met you was on a political campaign.
I remember that.
You've been outed, Brian.
I know.
Hi, John.
Well, I won't
John,
mention which campaign or which party, but I can attest to the fact that you folks are you're no shrinking violets. You are out there at every occasion.
And, thanks,
and that's
John.
The thing I love. We
kind of like
you.
You.
We have go ahead.
No, go ahead, John.
Well, I just wanted to say, too, we have a Kiwanis Club here that we've had and have several people with wheelchairs there. I think of Pastor Doug Carroll, and a newer member, Kathy Boyd. And she even uses paratransit, the ride-along, to get to the club at 7:15 in the morning on Tuesdays. And
that's
great.
You know,
awesome. These people are you're very dedicated, and the thing is that you're dedicated to the community, and you're not expecting people to just, you know, serve you. You're out there serving others. That's what's remarkable.
So, John, how do you think we do as a community, the Central Coast, from Monterey to Santa Barbara overall? I mean, do you think that we've grown?
We have a long way to go. Yeah. I think there's, for example, in the downtown there and throughout our neighborhoods, there are still too many curbs that need curb ramps. And the city hall itself, I fought for all 8 years I was on the city council to get an elevator put in that building, and I'm still working on that. You know?
Thank you, John.
And so yeah, it sounds like quality
you
of life.
Paul Wolf, and that's he's a champion for that kind of thing. Physical design is so important for the disabled.
Well, and it sounds like the theme today has been about community and ease of action and movement within the community so that no one feels like they're excluded from participating. And it sounds like Bev and Brian have done a great job of finding their place in such a way that, that they bring the community to them. And that feels like another message that, you know, with all people, if we put out into the world a positivity or a sense of openness and invite people into our lives, we build a community. But if we stand off and expect people to come to us and ask us questions or invite us in, it's a little more challenging.
Well, John knows that for our community, I was on the Human Relations Commission. And
that's right.
That was a privilege. And we saw lots of different issues, and some of them dealt with disability. And we were fortunate to have a city that has such a commission, because mm-hmm. many cities don't have that.
Well, it's bringing, I guess, awareness about the world to everyone. Thank you, John, for taking the time to call in.
Thanks, John.
Good discussion.
And I really appreciate both Bev and Brian. I'm glad we finally got ourselves together and into the studio after so many months. I hope this is the first of maybe other conversations we could have together, because I feel for myself that this is an issue and a conversation that needs to be had more regularly so that we create a community where everyone feels like their voices are heard or that their lives are recognized or that we are recognized. So thank you for taking the time to come in. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can podcast our shows through iTunes or your favorite app store, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can reach me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or through our Facebook page. As always, I thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX. I look forward to continuing our conversation next Tuesday at 2.
There's so much that we need to share, so send a smile and show you care. So.